Hello, friends. This is your host, Kim, and this is How to Get Away with Law, the unofficial podcast for the hit ABC show, How to Get Away with Murder. Well, I'm sure you're about as glad as I am that the season has started. Season two, we are about to recap and get into the nitty-gritty, the details of episode one titled It's Time to Move On. And now, are we really moving on in this episode? I guess we'll see. I guess we'll start with the very, very, very short recap that was provided by the wonderful people at ABC.com. This will be short and sweet, so hold on to your hats. It's going to happen. Annalise Keating and her students must move on with their lives as though nothing has happened, but the students are still reeling over Rebecca's disappearance. Only Annalise and Frank know that Rebecca was murdered, and the two are determined to find out who killed her. Meanwhile, Annalise decides she wants to take on a new client, a brother and sister who are accused of killing their parents. And an old friend surprises Annalise at home and teaches her a valuable lesson. See? I told you that was short. And without further ado, let's get on into digging into this episode. It doesn't look like they decided they want to do any strange time jumps because we get right back to the situation where we find Rebecca getting ready to be murdered. And how does she get murdered? She is suffocated, which is pretty brutal, I'm not going to lie. I'm pretty sure a good percentage of us hated Rebecca all of last season, but that doesn't make me feel any less upset at the way she died. I mean, that was rough. Also, I want to point out the actress who plays Rebecca, Katie Finley, is either really flexible or that was a stunt double. Judging from Katie's Twitter reaction, I don't think it was her that did it, but whoever that stunt double was, she is flexible, must be hitting that yoga. That woman is amazing. Give her a raise. That is a one bendable woman. Kudos to you, lady, whoever you are. So, finally, we return to the infamous classroom where we first get introduced to all the students last season, and Wes comes in all late, and he is a total D-bag. And he, of course, decides he wants to pass on all the questions, and he has to be all sassy about it and saying, you know, basically pass, that means I don't have an answer, I'm not going to answer, blah, blah, blah. Come on. Bibble D-Baggins, calm down. No need to be that rude. I can understand he's upset. Rebecca's gone. They have no clue where she's at. He's mad. So his girlfriend that he was in love with, she's gone. I understand. But dang, man. At least have some respect in class. Annalise is convinced that it's not Wes who killed Rebecca, and I'm pretty sure all of us were thinking that. We've heard time and time and time and time again on this show that when somebody is murdered, their spouse or their loved ones, and I think even in this scene, are the people they look at closely. But, of course, us fans who have been watching the show, we're not falling for that crap. Wes didn't do it. Psh, whatever. You know, a friend of mine said that she stopped watching this show last season because she found some of the students really annoying. You know, I'd agree with her. But obviously I didn't stop watching the show, or else I wouldn't be doing this podcast. But I do agree with her, because I'm pretty sure you know who I'm about to name when I talk about annoying student, and that is Michaela. She drives me insane. She's like 12. Drives me just crazy. Always complaining. She's has no control over her emotions. Selfish. Just, yes, she's definitely the annoying student. And what was really annoying is when all the students show up at Annalise's house and Laurel and her are just going at it about the whole thing where Laurel blackmailed her with the engagement ring, and which I thought was a pretty smart move because we all know Michaela flies off the handle, would crack at any moment at any time, and so they had to find a way to shut her up. But of course Michaela's in here acting like a little 12-year-old, like mocking Laurel. It's just, come on, Michaela, driving me insane. Now in this situation, find that Annalise is all about just shoving Bonnie aside for Frank, Bonnie all last season was just a wallflower, pitiful wallflower, all mousy, not paid attention to, and it looks like she's just continuing that role on this season. Just nobody pays attention to her. She's relegated to the role of get out of the room while the adults are talking. Well, okay. Sorry, Bonnie. We get to our court case of the week, Catherine and Caleb, who are brother and sister, obviously not biologically. I mean, one's definitely Asian, one's definitely black. He looks like he might be partially mixed there, but gotta know they're adopted, obviously. They're being accused of murdering their parents, and Annalise has decided that she wants to take this case and that the lawyer on the case is incompetent, and she decides she wants to just foil this whole plan and take this case away from him, but she's gotta make him trip up. And I don't know if this is a common an underhanded, dirty way that some lawyers do this in the real world. I hope not, but it's obviously not legal, and how in the world do people get away with this? But I guess this is TV. Gotta do this for drama's sake. So we return back to the house, and oh my goodness, what do we see? Famke Janssen. Oh yeah. Gotta love some Jean Grey. Gotta love Famke Janssen. She's gorgeous. As one of my other friends put it, she's got some gorgeous hair. Yes, she does have some seriously beautiful hair. She's playing Eve Rothlow, who is a death row attorney. And Michaela says that Eve founded the exoneration group. And that's where we're going to move on to the first time we're going to do it this season. I did it all last season. A section called the law term. This isn't exactly a law term, but I just thought this exoneration group was something I wanted to research. And as I was researching, I found that I didn't see a group called the Exoneration Group, so I assumed this was just something made up for the show. But I did find something interesting that sounds like a similar idea, and I want to bring it to your attention. I found it on a website called innocentproject.org. And here, just to make sure I get the details, the Innocent Project was founded in 1992 by Barry C. Looks like Check and Peter J. Newfield at the Benjamin N. Cardoza School of Law at Yeshiva University to assist prisoners who could be proven innocent through DNA testing. To date, more than 300 people in the United States have been exonerated by DNA testing, including 18 who served time on death row. These people served an average of 14 years in prison before exoneration and release. The Innocence Project's full-time staff, attorneys, and Cardozo Clinic students provide direct representation or critical assistance in most of these cases. The Innocent Project's groundbreaking use of DNA technology to free innocent people has provided irrefutable proof that wrongful convictions are not isolated or rare events, but instead arise from systemic defects. Now an independent nonprofit organization closely affiliated with Cardozo School of Law at Yeshiva University, the Innocent Project's mission is nothing less than to free the staggering numbers of innocent people who remain incarcerated and to bring substantive reform to the system responsible for their unjust imprisonment. Now, they have the causes of wrongful conviction. As the pace of DNA exonerations has grown across the country in recent years, wrongful convictions have revealed disturbing fissures and trends in our criminal justice system. Together, these cases show us how the criminal justice system is broken and how urgently it needs to be fixed. We should learn from the system's failures. In each case where DNA has proven innocence beyond doubt, an overlapping array of contributing factors has emerged, from mistakes to misconduct to factors of race and class. There are countless cases we can see if you check out the site at innocentproject.org. Those countless cases, those exonerated by DNA testing, aren't the only people who have been wrongfully convicted in recent decades. For every case that involves DNA, there are hundreds that do not. Only a fraction of criminal cases involve biological evidence that can be subjected to DNA testing, and even when such evidence exists, it is often lost or destroyed after a conviction. Since they don't have access to a definitive test like DNA, many wrongful convicted people have a slim chance of ever proving their innocence. These factors are not the only causes of wrongful conviction. Each case is unique, and many include a combination of the above issues. So they have this graph here that's contributing causes of wrongful convictions, and it's the first 325 DNA exonerations. which is the total is more than 100% because wrongful convictions can have more than one cause. But you got some crazy things like 72% eyewitness misidentifications in 235 cases, unvalidated improper forensics in 154 cases, which is 47%, 27% false confessions and admissions, 88 cases, and 15% informants, snitches, 48 cases. And you can even see some of their other cases that they have sections where you can see people who have been exonerated using DNA or other means. It has all sorts of awesome information, and you can check all of that out and all that research once again at innocentproject.org. Pretty awesome, really informative. But we will move on back to the episode in depth here. Annalise is definitely dead set on protecting her students, and this has definitely put her in some of the worst possible situations, don't you think? She's willing to do anything. She's now got the situation with Nate. He's getting ready to be on trial, to be put away on death row, and she's doing whatever she can, getting Eve's help, all sorts of stuff to cover up this crazy mess. And mainly, for the most part, she's protecting Wes, even though the other students are implicated in this whole thing. But she's mainly protecting Wes because she has a special connection with the puppy, aka Waitlist. So we're going to move on to something a little more light, not all that light compared to the rest of what's going on in the show. Oliver and Connor's storyline makes me sad, but it also gives me the feels. Because it's so sweet and so cute that Connor's still with Oliver, even though he's been proven to be HIV positive, and that Connor's on PrEP, and he's willing to work this out. I mean, obviously he's a little backed up and frustrated unless he goes somewhere and do a little something-something, but Oliver's not ready, but it's cute. We find out later that Oliver moves in, and it's awesome, and apparently it looks like Oliver plays lacrosse. If I got that right, that was in his book. Never mind, that's not important. Okay, back to the drama. Frank apparently is a computer hacker. What else? What can this guy not do? But then again, I watched a little bit of Scandal, so it doesn't surprise me that somebody would have amazing hacking skills in this group. But he is really trying to find somebody to blame. He's reaching for this hardcore, just finding somebody to blame in this whole situation. And I wonder, why is that? Why? We already know that Sam made Frank kill Lila for him. But why is Frank so anxious to find this killer? Is it just because he just wants justice done, or what? I guess we'll move on to the rest of the episode and see what that's all about. Wait, before we move on, though, Annalise doesn't know still that Sam had Frank kill Lila. When do you think Annalise is going to find out? When should she know? She's got to know before the end of season two, right? She better. They can't drag that secret out that long. That'd be crazy. Laurel's proven to be a nosy pain in the ass. She's over here in the courthouse bugging Bonnie about Rebecca and rubbing Bonnie's nose in the fact that Annalise trusts Frank. Once again, Bonnie getting shat on hardcore. Sucks for her. Life just really sucks being Bonnie, the wallflower. Also, once again, has anybody ever tried to ID these students when they come in with some sort of false information or try to pump somebody for information? Wouldn't you just try to see if you can get their details? Or I don't know. Maybe they should be investigating these students a little harder when they come in. Or maybe they just think it's nothing because this happens. Like they'll get some random human being that walks in. And, you know, these students, I guess, are doing good jobs. Especially Connor over here used to be just using his masculine wiles to get information and stuff like that. But you would think, maybe... people would just, I don't know, maybe ID these students something, get more details. These people are being conned by these students. It's crazy. Anyway, sorry I went back on that tangent even though we went over that. It's just, it's strange. That's so weird. So, Bonnie getting turned down once again for a little fun time with Asher, which is strange because, of course, we saw in season one that Asher was trying to get in them pants during the bonfire, and he succeeded. And it's been cute, their little back and forth. But all of a sudden, Maelstrom doesn't want any, and oh, he's got schoolwork. So I wonder what's going on there. Once again, Bonnie being shat on. But we don't have time to think about that for too long because Eggs 911 reappears. Are we also going to find out who Eggs 911 is soon? Hopefully. I have a theory, but I think that won't work until we get to later in this. But hopefully, I remember by the time we get there. But we got to figure out who Eggs 911 is also before the end of the season, or it'll drive me crazy. I'm gonna have to say when Eve comes to talk to Nate, and they have a little exchange in his apartment, and she's just trying to feel him out so she can think about taking the case for Annalise, or for Nate, because of Annalise, because Annalise gave Nate last season the number, and the number led to him calling Eve, we find out this episode. And then, of course, then Nate brings out something weird, the race card. And it felt like the scenario was backwards because Nate says, oh, white people always bring up the race card when it suits them. But, well, it kind of matters in this situation, man, because you were on death row. You were on trial for the murder of a white man who was married to a black woman. So race will factor in, of course. This is just what happens. I'm sorry that I asked this question and blah, blah, blah. But unfortunately, that's just how this works. But whatever. Maybe he's upset. He just doesn't want to answer. He's mad. He's being framed. So I guess I can only yell at him so far. But at this point, aren't you wondering why Eve would ever do any favors for Annalise? Annalise have everybody in the palm of her hand, so why in the world would Eve want to do anything for her? But as you can see in the next scene, after Eve meets with Nate, she doesn't want to take this case at all. She thinks Annalise, there's just nothing good inside of Annalise, and she isn't going to do this. She's not going to be taken down for Annalise framing Nate. And of course, Annalise doesn't exactly confirm or deny that she framed Nate. Now we have to get to something annoying once again with the annoying student because Michaela decides she wants to text Eggs 911 instead of waiting for Eggs 911 to text her. What an idiot. I can't stand you. Next, we find out that Laurel doctored the spa video once again. I'm gonna go back to me talking about how people should be checking their sources and making sure that they're factual before they present them in court, because now it burdened them and they have made a mistake in this case with the adopted kids who are on trial for murdering their parents. And look, now Annalise has the case. Man, they just made that real easy. Idiots, check your sources. And even after, right after the success of the doctor video, well, Bonnie gets pushed aside so Annalise can talk to Frank. Once again, Bonnie the wallflower. So just to calm Frank down, Annalise decides, I'm going to go ahead and have a dinner with Wes. And that's, of course, where it's confirmed. We all already knew Wes didn't do it. He just thinks Rebecca ran away. And he's all broken up about it. And Annalise has kind of got that look on her face like, oh, it sucks for you, kid. You think she ran away, but sure, your girlfriend is dead. Except I can't tell you that. Sorry. Here's dinner. Here's some wine. Drink up. Now, Laurel stops by Frank's house, and I want to know what the heck was he looking at before Laurel knocked on the door? Was he writing Michaela a dating profile, or was she writing a dating profile and he was just spying and he was shirtless and it was weird? Laurel wanted to know if there was a girl in the apartment, but he was shirtless and it was weird. But anyway, Laurel's being nosy and hits on the truth, even though Frank just tells her she's crazy, that Rebecca is dead. Of course, Frank's now, oh my God, I'm off the West train, and now I think it's Laurel. Laurel is the killer. But Annalise knows better. Annalise knows it's not Laurel. But this is where it gets crazy, guys. So it was Bonnie. A nice twist, but I'm sort of still battling it because, I mean, what a heel turn. Not sure I'm altogether convinced Bonnie could snap and do that. I mean, does she know Frank is a killer and that she needed to become a killer like him to gain Annalise's favor? I mean, did they build Bonnie up enough to make her snap this way? Yes, yes, I know this woman was groveling on her knees for Annalise's forgiveness last season, but this? I don't know. I guess we'll see how it plays out. Obviously, we have no choice but to see how it plays out. But what a brutal way to murder her, but I guess at least it left no marks. Guess that's the plus side to taking a bag and straight suffocating somebody, but whatever, I guess. We'll just have to see the convincing to see if I believe Bonnie could do this. I know she said Annalise was in trouble and she went to help her out, and Annalise couldn't see how much trouble she was in, so she helped her out, and this is what Annalise would do, but no. Annalise says, "You are a monster, Bonnie, just like Sam, and you were in love with Sam." I don't know. Weird. Maybe you guys can convince me. I don't know. Let me know. Why don't you tweet at me? At getawaywithlaw. Email howtogetawaywithlaw@gmail.com. Or the Facebook group, which you can just search out How to Get Away with Law. And get on the group page. Let me know. Tell me. Convince me why Bonnie would be the perfect heel turn. I mean, she's definitely the unexpected person, the wallflower, but I don't know. Convince me. Or tell me you are in the same boat. Either way. Back to the story. So, now we find out why Eve would do things for Annalise. They used to hook up. Interesting. I mean, this wonderful screen candy for me. We all know my preference. I mean, come on. Viola Davis, Bobka Jensen, making out, caressing each other's hair. Come on. Good stuff for me, but I won't go on about that, but hey, Annalise just has everybody wrapped around her fingers. Gosh. Or her vagina in some case. Anyway, sorry. After that, we get this weird club scene with Annalise and the students. And I won't go into much detail as a weird scene. They all looked happy, and Annalise is all touching Wes all awkwardly like she did that one time in her office, all caressing him and stuff, and that was real strange. Interesting. But here we go. We finally get Asher into the storyline involving Sam's murder, but in a way that's not going to really work for our group of students here. He's talking to that snooping lawyer and admits that Eve was at Annalise's place. And so here we go. Asher's finally in the plot, but it doesn't look like it's going to fare well for our students and Annalise. Which sucks. Poor Asher. He's so innocent, but he's about to take down this group, and do we want this group to go down? I don't know. Maybe Michaela. But, oh, poor Asher. He's so sweet, but this is gonna suck. Then, of course, we find out that Miss Spa Day Aunt was murdered. Hers was definitely more brutal than Rebecca's. Got her neck all sliced up. That was gross. But I'm pretty sure it had to be one of the adopted kids. Had to be. And it had to be the son. He was going out for a run while his sister was over there painting. They're looking joyful and gleeful. You know, they got the new lawyer who is being possibly accused but not on trial for killing her husband and all that stuff. And maybe it looks easy, you know. He's out for a run and they're just going to throw another twist at us and say, no, it wasn't him or her, you know, somebody else, whatever. But if anything, I think that those brother and sister, the adopted brother and sister, looks a lot like those two might be sleeping together. I don't know. They look a little cozy and comfy. What do you guys think? I don't know. Let me know. Give me some feedback on that one because I really think those two were boning. So, last scene we get. Wes is all running away, and we get this voiceover of Annalise talking once again about how, you know, of course, the person that murders us is most likely to be somebody we know. And here we go with Wes running away, and then we see blood on the picture. And it's a picture of the murdered parents with the two adopted children painting. And it looks to me like, of course, the daughter is a painter, so we can make that connection. It looks like, you know, they're in the house of the adopted kids, and there's blood on the picture, and Annalise is on the floor just like flooding blood, apparently, and Wes is just running away. And of course, we get this after it tells us this is 2 months later after that club dance scene of awkward. And also in that voiceover, we get, you know, might be murdered by someone you know that might be your lover. And we're just thinking, oh God, here we go. Did Annalise and Wes finally take that step of becoming lovers? I don't know. It makes me real uncomfortable. I mean, we already threw out the storyline that he could be her son, but bleh, bleh, bleh. I don't know. So, of course, now we're thinking, oh, who did this? What the heck happened? We get our flashback that we have to parse, like we did in the first season with the killing of Sam. But at least we know who the person is that is bleeding on the floor. She's not necessarily dead like they would kill Viola Davis right now. But what the heck happened? And was it Wes's fault? I mean, he's at the center of every single murder we've had, and the only person we could say he really murdered was Sam, because he was all over Rebecca and about to choke her to death. But how many times can we pin this on Wes, and when is it actually going to be his fault again? Maybe it's a situation where the two adopted kids attacked her, and Wes is running to go get help, or maybe they killed those two or something like that. The brother and sister are now dead, and Wes is just running away for some, I don't know, to get help. I have no idea what's going on. But hey, maybe you guys know. Maybe we'll find out who got away with murder, and I can't wait till the next episode. So I'll go ahead and end this long rant. And guys, if you want to send some feedback, just tell me what you're thinking, what you want to see. About this episode, about this podcast even, some feedback, whatever you want, go ahead and send it to howtogetawaywithlaw@gmail.com or tweet me at getawaywithlaw or go to the Facebook, search out the group How to Get Away with Law, leave some comments there, tell some friends, whatever, just get the word out there, and please go on iTunes, rate the podcast, give me your honest opinion, I like fives. But I'll take whatever you give me, even if it's horrible. But it would make me cry. Anyway, guys, it's your host, Kim, signing out. Talk to you next time.